Now Mac was in the pines, the trail narrow at points and moist, and still he saw where Rusty had tracked. He spent an hour like that, in and out of the trees, breaking into the sage day, the hundred-mile vistas, and then again into the green dark. "Goddamn girl," he said. At the saddle near the summit, he stopped and whistled three times the way he could, the sharpest, loudest noise a human can make. Nothing. A little ahead, he saw where Rusty had left the trail and begun to descend the far slope. Oh, shit, shit, shit. It was noon. The day was gone. He should have brought the walkie-talkies, his rifle, a lunch. "Girl," he called. "Rusty," he called. She was off the trail now, side-hilling the sage to who knew where. The way was steep, and there were shale outcroppings. At least it was clear and sunny, but the day was gone. They'd never lost a girl before. They'd had blisters and splinters and hangovers and one broken arm when a boy fell off the corral fence, but no one had been lost. No one had perished. On the shady side of the mountain, 14 bighorn sheep ascended in bursts up the sandy mountainside, tame as barn goats, and obliterated the girl's trail. He rode out looking for the tracks and could not find them. She either went up or down, and now it was 3 o'clock. To hell with you. Mac knew that Rusty would know when the sun hit 4 to head for home, if she was still aboard. To hell with you and your camera, lady. This far from the ranch, there were 3 or 4 ways back, and Mac climbed up and over the summit and then just guessed the stream trail and struck for that, 1.5 miles east. It was warm in the sun and fresh in the shadows climbing down. He was deadheading it, but he had been gifted with directional skill that even his father remarked on. He hit the box creek and watered Copper Bob, and then led him by the reins up to the log bridge he had built with his father 10 years before when he was 7. His father taught him the chainsaw and let him run it, bucking the thin logs into 5-foot lengths for the flooring. All that green wood was now dried slate gray and appeared an artifact of the frontier. Before he saw the bridge, he heard Copper Bob snuffle, and there was Rusty tied to a tree. The girl was lying on the bridge, her arms out as if she had fallen from a great height. She was bare-legged, and her new brown corduroy jeans lay jumbled by her head. Mac and Copper Bob walked up. "You asleep?" She looked at him without moving her head, her face upside down to him. "I'm okay." She pulled her shirt tail down over her underwear. "I guess I'm lost," she said. He stood silent. The two horses nosed each other. Mac held the horse. He could see the angry red chafe on her thighs. "What's your name again?" she said.
"I guess your bear got away."
He stepped up and checked Rusty's saddle, which was secure, and the bridle. "He did a good job with his gear."
"I can't ride anymore," she said. "I can't touch my legs."
"We just need to get you back, and then you can soak," he told her. "We have to go, though."
She sat up and looked at her inflamed legs. She stood and pulled her pants on tenderly.
"Oh, God, I can't even walk."
"You're about skinned," he said, "but I've seen worse." "Move through it," he said. "We'll get you to the ranch road and I can bring the truck."
"How far is that?"
"Up over there and down, 2 miles, a little more."
She stepped stiffly to the horse and Mac helped her up. She moaned and said,
"Where's that bear?"
"Montana," he told her. "You scared that bear a good one, jumping on him that way."
She laughed and cried out softly as Rusty followed Copper Bob across the old wooden bridge and into the glade. "What's your name?" she had said.